Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. If you head to the link in the show notes, you are going to find lots of really great places to go. You'll find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by Marcy Shimoff, Bob Doyle, Michael Beckwith, all from The Secret. It was endorsed by John Gray, Anita Morjani. So go check it out. You'll also find links to my courses, to free live masterclasses, to free downloads, and lots of ways to stay connected. And of course, you'll find links for my lovely guest as well. And as always, this podcast is a part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing a lot in the realm of personal development. We have some amazing live events coming up. I was just on a stage with Les Brown and Dr. Joe Vitale from The Secret. So tune in, stay connected. Lots more coming up on the pipeline.
Hi, I'm Chris. When I was younger, I went through trauma that caused me to feel broken and lost. But my life changed after I had a spiritual awakening. Since then, I've dedicated my life to studying and learning from masters all around the world that have helped me to create a life of fulfillment and abundance beyond my wildest dreams. Now I'm dedicated to sharing everything I've learned so that you don't have to suffer for decades like I did. I've seen people's lives completely transform, and I share it all right here.
All right, so I'm so excited to have my guest today. With me, I have Elizabeth Kipp. So Elizabeth is a stress management and historical trauma specialist who uses trauma-trained and yoga-informed addiction recovery coaching, ancestral clearing, compassionate inquiry, and yoga to help people with their healing. Elizabeth healed from over 40 years of chronic pain, including anxiety, panic attacks, and addiction. She now guides others to unleash their healing power, find freedom from suffering, and live a thriving life. She is the best-selling author of The Way Through Chronic Pain, Tools to Reclaim Your Healing Power. So welcome, Elizabeth. I'm so happy you're here.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. It's great to be here.
So I always start my episodes the exact same way, and that is by asking my guests to share their origin story. So what is it that led you to become the healer that you are today?
Oh, well, really two things. My mother was an undiagnosed and untreated sufferer of bipolar disorder and alcoholic. Very unpredictable behavior on a daily basis. I kind of grew up with that. And that created a lot of stress in my body. I learned to be quiet and not express my emotions. So that's a recipe for chronic pain right there. And by the way, chronic pain is any pain that's felt 15 days out of 30 for 3 months or more, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. The body can't tell the difference. It all sends the same signal to the brain. It hurts, right? So history of chronic pain, suffering as a child. And then I had an accident when I was 14 and broke a vertebra at the base of my spine, the fifth lumbar, right above the sacrum. And split in two, front and back, and the front part slipped forward. And I lived with that, with that slight slip, about a 25% slip for 14 years. And finally, I needed surgery. And so we followed four different surgeries followed to try and stabilize that slip. And by the time we had the last surgery, it was 80% slipped. So basically, they built a metal bunch of rods and screws and stuff around that and stabilized it, which was amazing. But every time I had surgery, I went into that whole experience with chronic pain. And every time I had surgery, the pain got worse. And there was a lot of, their solution was opiates and benzodiazepines as the best quality of life that I could live. My background was in science They kept telling me I would never get better and that I'd have to be on drugs for the rest of my life. And I, because of my background, I knew, or I felt very strongly, that they were telling me more about their model, the medical model they were working under, and not not about the body's ability to heal. So that was kind of a premise that kept me going for, I was on all the medication for 31 years before I finally found a doctor who understood the nature of chronic pain and could detox me off all those medications. And because I kept hearing this, you'll never get better from chronic pain. And I met thousands of other patients in all that time, right? In hospital, doctor's offices, rehab centers, all that stuff, that heard the same thing. When I finally healed, I was like, I'm going to get out and get the message. I'm going to send the message that you can actually heal from chronic pain. And we have more integrated doctors and a better understanding of the brain and what chronic pain does to it and how to heal the changes that happen in the brain as a result of chronic pain. Opiates and benzodiazepines do not do that. So I really wanted to dedicate myself to helping people heal from the chronic pain experience, which includes addiction. People trying to heal from addiction and trying to heal that are in recovery already, but have this chronic pain element. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. I think, unfortunately, so many people can relate. I was just reading, they did a study and only 5% of the world's population are not suffering pain or illness. Like they have quote unquote perfect health, which is pretty mind-blowing. And 31 years is a long time to be on medication like that. So how did you finally heal?
You know, it was the darndest thing. I went into Dr. Peter Prepskop. I'm going to grab his book. Into this guy's program at the Betty Ford Center, Peter Prepskop. He wrote this book, Conquer Chronic Pain, An Innovative Mind-Body Approach. He passed away in 2016, but he left us this beautiful book. I went into his program in 2013, and there were 20 other people like me in the program at the time. Not with quite the length of, that's kind of unusual, the length that I was under, but they might have 5 or 10 years on opiates, so that's still opiates and benzos. Now, that was interesting to me that I was running into that many other people that were trying to detox. And he detoxed me. It took me about 10 days just to kind of detox from that. And just in terms of just in a bed, you know, the body dealing with all that. And then I was able to get up, and it took about, I don't know, 3 years to detox off of all those, the benzo, the effect of the fallout of the benzos in my body. Anyway, I went into that program. I walked in there with 40 years of chronic pain, and I walked out 52 days later with no pain. And he never promised that. He never promised that. He just said he could help me reset my stress response. And when I talked to him before I went into the program, and he said he could help me detox off the meds. And at that point, I was like, I don't care about the pain. The meds are killing me. And I'm having panic attacks, which the benzos were causing. And he said he could reset that. And I'm sold. I'm coming. Right. But he never said the pain would go away, but it did. And he had a 94% success rate in that program with people walking out of his program with this history of chronic pain and walking out with none of it. That was amazing. Yeah.
That is amazing. That's absolutely amazing. That's exactly the word I would use for it too. So what is it that he did? Was it energy healing? What's the main idea behind his modality?
Oh, well, really anything. He did a lot of things. It was holistic. He did a number of things to help us, as I said, reset the stress response. So just as a quick back, we'll back up for just a moment. Normally in a healthy person, we have a stress response that goes on when we are under threat or perceived threat. Stress response goes on. We have a physiological reaction to that. And then when we deal with it, threat goes away. Stress response goes into the off position. That's normal. In chronic pain, the stress response gets stuck in the on position. Now we're talking about chronic stress, which is the body isn't made for that. We're just, it's caustic to the body. It's quite toxic. So you can imagine the amount of healing that people are having to do when they're suffering from that, right? So he brought in things that helped us reset the stress response. One of them was just simple breath work, but targeted long, deep breathing in a kind of regular fashion to help us get regular instead of all over the place, chaotic, which happens in the brain because of chronic pain. So regular, targeted, long, deep breathing. It doesn't sound that complicated, but the effect on the nervous system is amazing. So just as a for the listeners that aren't in chronic pain that are listening to this, the mind follows the breath. So I know during my day, when my mind starts getting kind of jumping, I know that my breath is also not normal. It's gone erratic or shallow, right? So I know to bring in a long, deep breath. So that's kind of a general principle. So he started right at the nervous system level. He had us do Qigong, again, some energy healing modality, but also physical. And also has breath involved. He had us do meditation beyond the breath meditation. We did adversity therapy to deal with the all of us had trauma, unresolved trauma, and he helped us clear that. And he brought an ancestral clearing, John Newton. He brought John Newton in of Health Beyond Belief with his ancestral clearing modality that addresses it's the burden of the past, but it includes the burden of the past from the lineage. And that was very powerful. Also, we had a good diet. They kept us well hydrated. So we addressed the nutritional part of it. I think, and also we did it in groups. So we did the adversity therapy. He did that not just one-on-one. He did it in the whole, he'd have the whole class. Each person would work through whatever their thing was, and then he'd help us re-script that event to make it more empowering, and then all the group would come in and support. So the community was another aspect.
Yeah, thanks for running me through all that. Like everything you said, I was nodding. I was like, yeah, I've heard about that, or I've tried that, or like you said, some of these things are so simple, but they're so powerful. So can you just give a little bit, I know you kind of touched on it, but a little bit of background for listeners on nervous system and how that kind of ties into the stress response with chronic pain?
Sure. I think the entry point I'd like to bring in is this, because I could do a couple of hours on this, but I'll bring it from this angle. There's an intimate connection between the brain and a long exhale. And when we have a long exhale, it sends a signal to the nervous system, the brain and the nervous system, that it's safe to calm down. So it's a calming signal. And in chronic pain, what are we? We're hypervigilant. We've developed a habit. This is how we do life. We do life by being stressed. It's addictive, actually. It's a pattern. That boy, I, you know, you talked about 5% not being only 5% being well. I wonder how many people in the United States or in the Western world are free of a stress pattern, right? A stress habit like that, right? So the nervous system not only responds to a long exhale, you got to do long, deep breathing with that exhale is long or longer than the inhale. For about 3 minutes for the nervous system to get the message. But I think the thing is that when the stress response is on this, it's not just on the on position. The brain has these things in it called neurons, which are these connections that are made. It's kind of the, it's how information is sorted out and passed and transmitted in the brain. There are these little cells, and we make networks of them. And there it was discovered when brain science kind of first got started that neurons that wire together fire together. So like events tend to be in the same network. And then when that network gets stimulated by an external event, or maybe an internal event, then the whole network goes off. So isn't that interesting? So if I have a history of somebody yelling at me and I didn't do anything wrong, right? And I don't feel safe, right? In my brain, I have a network in there around being hypervigilant because I don't feel safe. All the things that don't make me safe, it's not the things that are making me, I'm making the meaning, right? All the things that I perceive as not safe go into that network. And when I come into one of them, the whole network's going off. That's powerful to know. The other thing is the more the network gets used, the faster and quicker and more powerfully it fires. So now I've just described what a habit is. And I've just described an aspect of how that habit, a stress habit, is created in the brain. So when we're healing, we have to start doing practices that keep us, we're feeling safe, right? So that long, deep breath. And we have to practice it a lot so that we're building a new neural net in the brain. And we become, what you might say, attenuated to the stressors that used to fire that old network. They don't affect us so much anymore because we're referencing a new network, but it takes practice. You have to repeat because you've got all this history and this old habit. You have to build a new one and build new history, right? Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I love everything that you just shared. It absolutely answered my question. So besides deep breathing, how do we start to unwind our nervous system and reprogram our brain a little more? Or as far as like the modalities you teach?
Well, this is why I teach yoga. And I specialize in the trauma-informed part of it. So we end up being traumatized. We experience trauma in unsafe relationship. So we heal in safe relationship. And there's kind of a hierarchy to healing. We have to feel safe first, then we need a sense of belonging, and then we can learn. But you'll kind of notice, like, if you were a child in class when you were little and, you know, you're trying to learn something and the teacher starts getting angry and now you're not even able to learn. You've been plucked out. Your attention has been, the teacher has put their attention on you and pulled you as some kind of example because they're mad, right? As you're not in the group anymore, you're now separate from the group, you're not like everybody else. And now you can't learn because now you're hypervigilant. You don't feel safe because you've been targeted. And I've actually been on the firing end of that. Or I've seen other students be on the firing end of that. So it's just a small example, but it's very powerful and real, probably to almost everybody in the audience has probably experienced that somewhere in their education.
Yeah, it reminds me of Joe Dispenza's work a little bit, where he teaches that when your body's in that hyper aware fight or flight state, it's time for an emergency, right? You're like in an emergency zone and it's not time to learn.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Dr. Mark Perry showed us that there's this order, right? You got to feel safe first. Then you need a sense of belonging back to yourself, to others, like safe relationships. So safety and relationship, and then we can learn. So we need these three components, which I thought was a very interesting from an education point of view, to try and if we could incorporate that into the education model. And maybe most teachers know it. I don't know. I've never been educated. I've never gone through training college for education. But I'm just saying, like, the education I had, some of those teachers didn't learn that.
Oh my gosh. I know. I have a 5-month-old and I can't tell you how often I think about all of this. Like, our education system is so broken and I wish they taught how to heal yourself and how to meditate and yoga and all of these things in school for kids and didn't just kind of put them through the classroom and make them sit still so that they could be better workers, right? When they grow up, it's a tough thing.
The meditation is really important. And I've seen in some, why? Because it helps quiet the mind. And a mind that's under chronic stress or chronic pain, pick your description, your label, it's chaotic. Mm. I can't think straight. I don't remember what I just did. Also, there's a very strong emotional negative, which can be at others or ourselves or both. So meditation cuts through that signal. But when you're talking about somebody like us, where there's this underlying stressor, you really can't tell them to sit still because the nervous system reads danger as run, fight, or shut down. So if you're if you've got a student who's restless and you tell them to sit still and meditate, now you've maybe put them in a place where they're scared. So now they're not going to learn anything and there's no way they're going to meditate. So I take people, because I focus on this area, I take people through a moving meditation with a little music so that they don't get up and walk around, although we could do a walking meditation, that's fine. But we do a little bit of music and chanting as a way to get the body used to sitting still gently, mm-hmm. right? So meditation's a huge tool. Again, the ancestor clearing, I was just shocked at how powerful that was. And also, as I said, safe community. We're social creatures. We need to be social and we need to be socially safe socially, right? These things all help to reprogram the nervous system. They all work together and they're giving cues to the nervous system, the vagus nerve, the 10th cranial nerve, which goes into the face, the ears, it goes down into the throat and down into all the organs. And it's our threat assessment and social engagement system. So when it's activated, it tends to be dysregulated. It's not feeling safe when it's activated that way. Sometimes it's activated just because, you know, well, now I'm working, right? So I'm alert. But there's a difference between being alert and being alert because you're hypervigilant. You're looking for a threat all the time. There's a difference, right? And also there's that social engagement aspect where you and I right now, our nervous systems are talking to one another. Your vagus nerve and my vagus nerve are talking to one another and assessing, is she safe? And we are. And so we're what we call co-regulating. We're helping each other regulate our nervous systems. And this is what parents do for children. Mm-hmm. For little ones, for really little ones, they don't know how to regulate their emotions. So they have tantrums and they have whatever. You have a five-month-old, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. So the stability in our nervous system, the regulation in our nervous system helps them co-regulate. We help them find their way, which is why we have to do the best we can to be generative with our kids and not punishing, which I had the punishment. So I had to kind of figure out how to do that by myself. Not easy. Yeah.
Well, but if I may say, everything that you went through led to you being the amazing healer that you are today, right?
Oh, yeah. No, you know, that's just, you know, and I look back and at the life my mother led, and I have to tell you, Chris, when I learned about my own genetics, because, you know, when I learned about that, I was, and I knew a little bit about my mother's history, I realized she didn't have a shot coming out of the womb. Just because of like all the stuff that she had to deal with culturally, genetically, epigenetically, the kind of the momentum of the past, kind of and she didn't have tools. So a lot of kind of amazement that she made it as long as she did, as well as she did, actually.
Yeah. So I think that's a perfect segue into talking more about this generational trauma, or what the ancestral clearing. So talk to me a little bit more about that, because we can inherit trapped emotions or repressed emotions or baggage from our parents and our grandparents and even generations back, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. The easiest way to explain it really is, or one way, is that when your mother was pregnant, when your grandmother was pregnant with your mother, at the 4-month mark, your mother developed all the eggs she was ever going to have. So now the egg that was you is sharing space with your mother and your grandmother for 5 months.
Wild.
And so what does that mean? So that means whatever your mother and grandmother are experiencing in their lives, maybe there's some scarcity, maybe there's abundance, maybe there's a lack of safety, maybe there's lots of safety, right? See, you're experiencing that in the womb. So, and we're, you know, this is, I know this sounds a little bit woo-woo, but this is actually science-y. So you epigenetically, this is environmental epigenetic. So there's DNA, which is the, like the computer, right? The epigenetic part is the software on the computer. And depending on the environment, what software we put on the computer, that's what the computer puts out, right? So depending on the environment that we're developing in, that affects us. So I'm just going to leave everybody right there to just kind of take a breath, because that's a lot. And now I'm going to take you one more step. Your grandmother spent time in her grandmother and on down the line. And now we've got a through thread from way back, you know, as far as you want to the present. And now we're beginning to understand, at least epigenetically, how these things are passed. And I could talk about this for a couple hours, but that I'm keeping it, you know, kind of focused. Did that make sense? Do you have any questions about what I just...
No, it totally makes sense. And I appreciate the actual reality that we are eggs in our mother's womb inside our grandmother, because I think it's hard for people to grasp this idea of generational trauma or emotions being passed down, but it makes a lot of sense. If someone has an emotion vibrating through their body of anger or grief or fear, of course that's going to affect us, because it's all energy, right? So how do you, and you've talked a lot about epigenetics, and I love talking about epigenetics. You heard me say in the beginning of the show, it's spirituality, personal development, and science, and epigenetics and quantum physics and neuroscience and all of that is what I love to geek out on. So, you know, just for listeners who are maybe freaking out a little bit right now that, oh my gosh, this wasn't in my control. Like, what you teach and what a lot of healers teach is that we can change those genes by changing both the external and internal environment, right? Like, nothing is permanent. It's all adaptable. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, we could really go there. The present moment is this very powerful, often just not recognized as how powerful it is, space. The quantum physicists have really helped us understand this, because they tell us that we can access past, present, and future all at once through the present moment. Isn't that interesting? Now,
it's wild, yeah.
That tells me that even though I have the momentum of the past, carried into my present. It's possible all things are happening in this present moment. So the shift is happening here. We don't heal in the past or the future. We heal here, right? And the cell, the atoms in the cell are appearing and disappearing, you know, every fraction of a second. And so isn't that interesting? Where there's a lot happening in the present moment and nothing is actually fixed. There, it's just a lot of potential and possibility. In science, there's no such thing really as facts. There's probabilities. It's about that. So when you understand the power of what I just said, you can understand how all these different modalities that you teach and that I teach and that others teach, how they actually help us shift the momentum of the past into something new.
I really appreciate that explanation as someone who geeks out about quantum physics, especially because, you know, we have experiments in it, like the delayed choice experiment literally proves that what you do in the present can change the past. And we've all heard that time isn't really linear. It's all happening at once and it's fluid. Mm-hmm. And the way that you just outline that, just like put it into such a digestible perspective. So that's really cool. So how do you go about helping clear out these, how do you do the ancestral healing?
Yeah, so ancestral clearing is actually an energy modality that was pioneered by Howard Wills and is taught by John Newton. It's a trademarked and registered modality. And I'm one of John's practitioners. And he, as I said, he was with Dr. Peter in the treatment program. I was like, in the pain management program. I was like, this is amazing. So I took the first training I could out of when I got out of that program. And I've been in the work, I've been a practitioner ever since. So the way we do this is we're actually asking, we're recognizing we have an issue, right? And we're actually asking source, creator, God, consciousness, whatever you want to call the unified field, whatever you want to call it that created all of this, we ask it to help us release that which no longer serves us. And that's a reference to this, the momentum of the past that's acting in a way that no longer serves us in this moment. And we access the present moment when we do the practice. And we have about 30 different ways we can actually access, get at the burden. But I can take you through one that'd take maybe a minute and a half.
Love that, please.
Everybody listening here, if you could just drop into the body, notice what you're feeling. What sensations are arising? So I feel my sitting bones on the chair and my feet on the floor, and I can feel a little bit of heat in my upper chest. I have a little bit of heat in the back of my throat. And I'd say it's about, giving it a number from 0 to 10 of intensity, I'd say it's about a 2. So you do, everyone listening, do that for yourself, and then just stay present in the breath. Breathing normally, and then just let these words pass over you. Higher power, creator, holy father, great spirit, divine mother, infinite one, oneness. You're known by many names, yet you are one. We ask humbly and gratefully for us and all our ancestors and all their relationships through all space, time, dimension, realms, lifetimes, and incarnations. For all sickness and the ensuing grief and suffering, for the times we stood powerless and unable to ease the pain of our loved ones, for survivor's guilt in plagues and pandemics that swept through our lives and our communities, please help us all forgive one another and forgive ourselves. Please and thank you. for misunderstandings, disputes, arguments, fights that broke out, and resulting injuries, whether intentional or unintentional, and for all the guilt anyone carried because of it, for every raid, assault, incursion, battle, war, and holocaust, and for all the angst, the betrayals, the fierce anger, and any guilt we felt because of these actions, or guilt that others felt because of our actions, for all unresolved resentments, enduring aversions, loathing, and outright hate that erupted and continued unrelentingly, intergenerationally. Please help us all forgive one another and forgive ourselves once and for all, no matter what it was. Please and thank you for all secrets, hidden pacts, and for times we were sworn to silence under duress, for any abuse, slavery, torture, or any other injustice, and all that arose in the lineage because of these events, including physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual illness. Please help us all forgive each other and forgive ourselves. Please and thank you. Please help us release one another and release ourselves, find peace with one another, and find peace with ourselves. Once and for all, now and forever. Please and thank you. Please and thank you. Please and thank you. And just take a nice breath in and let it out and notice how that feels.
So the thing that I noticed before was my jaw was feeling really tight, and it's feeling more relaxed now.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was not looking for any of this when I first got exposed to this. I had no idea what was coming, and I felt a shift, and the people in the room felt a shift, and none of us. I was sitting there with my science hat out, going on. I know something just happened in this room. What the hell was it? and is it measurable? And can he repeat it? And does he teach it? You know, I was just, that's where I went with it, because I was so surprised. So I, when we ask the all that is for help, we get it.
So number one, if we want to do this on ourselves, do we need to say that whole prayer, or is the fact that like we are listening to you saying it enough? And then two, is it like each time something physical happens, we go through this process where we say the prayer, or come to you and you say it, or did that kind of clear out a whole bunch of junk?
Oh, well, I feel like it works on all levels as far as for the highest good of the people listening. So, you know, in yoga, we say there's five energy bodies, including the physical is just one of them. And you can't separate one from the other. So it's all being affected. So that's the whole thing, the whole shit match being affected. And the other question was, yes, you can listen to the prayer. We're asking Creator to forgive whatever it is we're carrying for us, for all versions of us, for our relationships and all of our ancestors and their relationships, whatever the thing is we want to release. And then we do it with gratitude and humility. That's basically the practice, but there's a lot of different ways to get at the burden, and it's a very interesting process to kind of work one-on-one or in groups. I do group work too. Yes, you can do the work yourself, but having a practitioner will maybe get at burden that you weren't able to see or access. Yeah.
Totally. It's interesting. I've been to other healers before, and right now I just read the emotion code. I don't know if you've read that. I'm reading the body code, and I've been working with a practitioner in it. And when I release things, the two things that my body does is yawn a lot and like want to stretch. And I've just yawned like six times. And I'm like, I had to tell you, because A, I don't want you to think I'm like being rude or bored, but like B, it's like, I'm definitely releasing something right now. It works. I can feel it. That's really amazing.
It's quite remarkable. I've got some clients that yawn up for 50 minutes. They're just you're getting it. There you go again. Yeah, so others cough, and there's all kinds of ways, different ways the body releases. So it's kind of interesting, you know. If I had I had to take a run of penicillin, so I'm now rebuilding my microbiome. So I'm running ancestral clearing prayers for boundary violations, right? That would be an example. Any kind of dysregulation in the family lineage, any disease, those kinds of things, and everything that led up to it. So I could do a clearing around that. But if I sat in front of a practitioner and brought this in, she would probably be bringing in things I couldn't see, because we all have blind spots. So if that makes sense.
It does. And that's why I like going to practitioners too, because we don't know what we don't know, and they're trained to tap into this universal energy. So I guess that's a good segue into another question. Like, there's probably a simple answer that I'm thinking of, but how does someone know they need an ancestral clearing?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah. So I have a number of people, maybe not the majority, but probably about half, that come to me and say, I have this thing and it's not mine. So there's something happening there. Now, I'm sure that Richard Schwartz and his internal family systems would have something to say about parts work there. that would be interesting. But that part may be referencing the past that's in the lineage. So whatever we're carrying in the present moment, it came from the past, because the present moment is a blank slate. So our mores, our beliefs, our kind of the weight that we carry, our attitudes, all those things have been imprinted from the past. And so, as I said, the present moment is a blank slate unless you bring in the past with it. Right? I don't think I answered your question.
I love what you said so much. I don't even remember what my question was now, because I love your answer so much. And it reminds me of something that I teach, that, you know, everything is our own perception, right? Like our own choice. We see things through the lens of whatever it is that we've been up to before that, right? Our belief system, the belief system piled on top of us, and seeing a blank slate, like I'm picturing like a empty chalkboard for some reason in my head. And it totally makes sense that most people bring all that junk with them, right? That chalkboard's just filled with scribbles and drawings. Because we're human, right? Like we take things personally, or things are laid on top of us, or this generational trauma. So I'm assuming the answer to, I guess I just remember the original answer, or the original question was, how does someone know that they need this work? And the answer is probably like, most people need this work, right?
Oh, most people need this work. But I have this thing I do, I don't feel like it's mine, or I have this thing I do, it keeps showing up and I don't understand why, that kind of thing, which is something in their past is imprinting, you know, is has some momentum in the present. So think of it like you like the physics part. So I think of it this way. So the past has momentum, just like we were talking about, the habit of stress has momentum. So every object in motion stays in motion until acted on by an equal or opposite force. So whatever our patterns is, or whatever we're up to, or it's going to stay, we're going to keep repeating that until we come in with a modality or some sort of something that's going to help shift that, with an equal or opposite force that's going to help shift that trajectory. So that's bringing it down kind of in the science, the sciencey part. We do have people who come in with like issues with their mom, or having a, you know, I just don't understand why I have so much trouble with my father. And it's what's interesting is when we get in the ancestral clearing process, it's not about the mother or the father. It's about something way back in the lineage that connected in, the thread comes into it. But it comes from long before that. It's kind of interesting.
That's super fascinating. One thing that they were saying in the emotion code, and I wonder if you've seen this as well, is that when you clear something like that in yourself, it clears everyone else in your line of that too. Have you found that as well?
Well, yes, and we're informed by that from physics, right? Because we can access past, present, and future all at once. So what's happening here affects the whole line. That's the best explanation that I can give. There you go again.
I can't stop yawning. I've yawned like 60 times, I feel like.
So that's the best explanation I have, because we see patterns, but like no scientists are going out and done a study, but the physicists tell us that they've done the studies, and that's what makes sense to me. See, that's why the emotion code, that's why it's coming up for them too. You're accessing the present moment, and that's so powerful because it affects the past and the future, because you're shifting what's happening here. Yeah.
It's like a ripple effect. I like the science brought in that something in motion stays in motion, because that makes sense, because we know that emotions are energy, right? And there's motion in that. So we only have maybe like 9 or so minutes left, but I would love to just really quick switch it over to yoga, because I know that's one of your other modalities. I don't know if you know this. I just sold my yoga company. I had a yoga company and I was director of a yoga company for years. So I'd love to hear your take on it, about just how yoga helps release these things, or how you use yoga in this healing.
I love the question, because I bring in both. I bring in the ancestor clearing, all three. I bring in the polyvagal theory stuff around the nervous system, and then I bring in yoga. And of course, yoga knew about all of this. Science is just starting to put labels to it, you know, starting to figure it out, right? I love what you said about seeing through the lens that we see through, right? The yoga sutras inform us. We see a life as we are. And the first yoga sutra tells us, yoga is now. So isn't that powerful? That's pointing us where? Right into the present moment, where the power is. And it also tells us that our conscious, the thing that's barring us from our seeing our true self meaning who I really am, not the personality, but the kind of the eternal part of me, what's barring us from doing that is the conditioning, the past, the imprint, right, of our habits. They call them samskaras. It informs, I mean, it's in the yogic texts, all of this stuff. It's just in a different, it's just laid out a little bit differently. So they've known about this for over 5,000 years. And I love bringing in, well, breath work is amazing at regulating the nervous system. And that alone, targeted breath work, when it's done, kind of, you need to kind of do it with a teacher, because there's all kinds of different breath work. When it's done and practiced, it has an effect of rewiring the brain so that it drops old habits and builds new ones. Because we don't normally breathe long, slow, and deep for 11 minutes. We don't normally do that. So what are we doing to the brain? Oh, we're giving us something new to do. So by definition, the brain is so adaptable. Now we're building something. We're building newness in the brain. We're giving it new instruction. So yoga, so there's the breath, there's meditation, there's mantra, very powerful. So the yoga of sound, all of it's pointing to this present moment experience where we're actually in samadhi, but it takes a little bit of a journey to get there.
I love that you just brought in the yoga text and we're like, look, they're saying everything that we've just been talking about. Because I hadn't really you know, I've studied the yogic text, but I hadn't really thought about it as one and the same, but it really is fascinating. Do you bring in the asanas at all in your practice, or is it more about the breath work and the chanting?
So it's an eight limb practice. And so we get all eight limbs.
Get all eight. Nice.
Because you want to have an integrated practice in order to integrate. And the asana would be different in a trauma informed, and even the pranayama would be different in a trauma informed class than in a straight up, you know, not trauma informed yoga class, but still it doesn't really matter. What matters is the now. What matters is the correct angle. So we're the asana part of yoga is all about angles and trying to like align. So yes, and depending on who I'm in front of, what class I'm teaching depends on. And you know, one of the things I learned as a teacher, which was very cool, I would walk in with a lesson plan, and I have a lot of teaching under my belt. I'd walk in with I'm going to do this for the class. And then I'm sitting in class and I'm watching people come in and I'm going, oh, I need to, because I said, so-and-so walks in and I'm like, oh, oops, this isn't going to quite work there. And so whoop, we just do a little modification. So this is part of the art of being a teacher, is being present, being able to kind of read the field, and being able to kind of adapt. And yoga is beautiful at that. Yoga is as long as you're keeping the seat of the asana, you can do modifications, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I haven't taught for a few months because I was very pregnant and then had a baby and I sold my company, but you just made me miss teaching so much, because you're right. Yes, as they're coming in and you know them, but it's also like mid-class. You're like, oh, I have to totally shift. So I never planned my classes because of that. It's like you have to read the room. And that's the very best part. Those are the best teachers that can do that and speak to the people in front of you, right? Not just rattle off some script, like actually talk to the humans in front of you and what they need that day. And often what you say is what you need to hear too, right? I love that part of it. Okay, so you do all this amazing work with the nervous system and the ancestral clearing and yoga. I'm sure listeners are like, how can I find you? How can I work with you? What does a session look like? So if you wouldn't mind sharing all of that, that would be wonderful.
Oh, well, you can find me at my website, which is Elizabeth with a hyphen between my first and last name, Elizabeth-Kipp.com. ElizabethKipp.com is a photographer and a web designer who's amazing, but she's not me. So with the dash in there, you can find me, all my social media is there. There's lots of blogs and ancestral clearing prayers and all kinds of free resources there. I teach classes and stuff. A session, I have a free introductory 15-minute session, and then I've got 25 and 50 minute sessions, and you can buy packages of those. And a session, you really described beautifully what my sessions look like. It depends. it depends on who I'm sitting in front of and what they're bringing to the table and what their intention is and how we work with that. And one of the reasons I have the tools in my toolkit that I do is because we need all these tools, but we need them a little bit differently depending on what the issue is at hand. So, yeah. And there goes another yawn. That's awesome.
It's been so many. That was so powerful for me. That's why I'm like keep muting myself while you're talking, so I'm not like in the background yawning. Thank you so much. This was so wonderful. I really enjoyed talking to you. I'm sure listeners love this as well. You are such a wealth of knowledge, and I really appreciate your time. If you are listening and you think there's someone in your life who could use this, please send it to them. Like, comment, share, subscribe, do all the things. Let's help spread all this good consciousness, help rise the level of consciousness on this planet. And have a beautiful rest of your day, everyone. I will see you at the next show.